You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Broken records, the albums you wouldn't shut up about. Broken records, the music our guests can't live without.
Like Judy,
Barbara,
Liza,
Bette,
Betty,
Audra,
Bernadette.
We broadcast this podcast with hopes that someday we might get Patti LuPone. Broken record, broken record, broken record, broken record, broken record.
Welcome to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. I'm Ben Rimmelauer, and I'm here. Well, I'm not here. I'm remote, but I am remotely connecting with my lovely remote co-host, Daniel Nolan.
Hey, y'all. Another installment of Quarren Streams with your lovely host, Ben and Daniel. This is so interesting because this is like the most I've ever seen you when we record, because usually we're like sitting TV family style on your couch in your apartment.
Yeah, totally. We're not doing that today, but we're looking at each other and we're talking to each other, and the smile you're smiling, you were smiling then, but we have some very big announcements to make today.
Yes, big announcement. Let's take care of business up top.
Yes. Well, first of all, we are very excited that we have a very, very, very special episode of Quarren Streams coming next week.
The most special.
Is the most special because Daniel and I are going to be Quarren Streaming the 1999 episode of the series Bravo Profiles, a wonderful, no longer in production documentary series on Bravo TV before it was all Housewives and shit. Yes. And we're going to be Quarren Streaming the fabulous episode centered around Tony Award winner Betty Buckley. It's going to be midnight and there ain't going to be a sound from the pavement because our special guest for the Quarren Stream is going to be Betty Buckley.
Miss Tony winner herself, Grizabella, original cast.
She will be joining us for the Quarren Stream, coming in remotely from her home, the Betty Lynn Buckley Ranch in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yes.
And we could not be more excited. I will be taking the opportunity to tell her just how much her albums have meant to me throughout my life. And I'm very excited to talk about the Bravo Profile episode with her because I remember when it came out, I taped it on VHS and I watched it to death.
Yes. And it's on YouTube, right? So our listeners
on YouTube,
can do
so
their homework now.
Can watch it. We'll add it to our Quarren Streams playlist.
And it's worth mentioning, this is our first guest who is also featured in our theme song.
That is right.
Just checking them off the list.
Like Betty.
Audra. No. Yeah, that's right. Betty, Audra, Bernadette. And then, of course, the final PLP, who we still haven't gotten, but she's expressed interest.
She has expressed interest.
Whether she remembers that expression or not is another story.
They approached me and asked if I wanted to do the podcast. At first I said yes, but then I said no. The really big news this week, though,
is that
in addition to our weekly episodes of Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records with Daniel Nolan, mm-hmm. we are adding a twice weekly half hour live stream chat show called
Tuesday, April, August. And that's it.
And hopefully not autumn, winter, next year, some year.
Oh,
but to get y'all, honestly, to get ourselves through these quarantine days.
Truly. You think we're doing this for y'all, but we just really
need to
stay sane in our own little matchboxes.
I mean, I said to Daniel, I need something to live for between episodes of Broken Records. But right. The thing is, we're just going to catch up on what we have been watching and what we've been listening to.
And I've been going deep in content.
Yeah, I mean, I've just been keeping a list because it's the stuff we usually talk about in like the segment before the meat and potatoes of the main interview. Mm-hmm. But it feels so much more vital moment to moment as I get through these days. I'm relying on that. I was in writing group today and somebody was saying like, you know, I want to write and create work, but like, I feel like, does it matter? And I'm like, yes, it matters. That is my lifeline, is the music I listen to,
totally.
The stories that I listen to, the things that I read, the things that I watch. Those are what are the humanity that gets me through this isolation.
Totally. And I think, you know, I mentioned this in that same group last week. Our lives in general, especially as New Yorkers, it's go, go, go. We're constantly, you know, trying to create stuff, get stuff done, schedule stuff, you know, create content, record. And it gets really easy to neglect kind of the refilling of one's vessel, if you will, and like the gathering of inspiration, certainly for me.
Julia Cameron calls that stocking the reservoir.
Totally, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been really doubling down, and during this time, I haven't really had much motivation to like write or create stuff as much, but like just because everything seems so meaningless. But I have been watching a ton of movies and TV, which I haven't done in a really long time, at least not for like, you know, adequate periods of time. I've been reading a lot. So it really does feel like I'm, you know, doing those artist states and really gathering that inspiration that will hopefully translate itself to creativity on my end once all of this is over or once I, you know, get the urge again.
Totally. Or not translate to creativity. Maybe it's just has meaning in and of itself. I mean,
right. Very true.
I always think of the line in Hedwig when Hedwig and Tommy Gnosis are like having their Nambla courtship and Hedwig said, I forget what Hedwig says, but Tommy like comes up behind Hedwig and is like, oh, you mean like procreation? And or he's like, you mean like recreation? And Hedwig's like, no, he's like, you mean like procreation? And Hedwig's like, no, like just creation.
I love that. That reminds me of the Rent. What's the Rent line? It's like the opposite of
war life. Isn't peace.
War it's isn't creation. Peace. It's creation. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway. Okay. Well,
we opposite, have a big line. We
the opposite of Rent line. Is what we're talking about today.
We are so excited that today we are corn streaming the legendary 1993 concert public television home video event, that's Jerry right. Herman's Broadway at the Hollywood Bowl.
And bitch, so it's far I think this is my favorite.
Now, I saw this concert live as well.
Thank
my friend
you.
Sarah Levy and I went, and I was really at the peak of my musical theater nerdness. Oh. It was the summer after my junior year of high school, and it was just like a couple of nights before I was leaving town to go to New York. I was going to do the Barnard summer pre-college program where I saw a million shows and had all the playbills taped to my wall. And at the exact same time, Patty was in London opening in Sunset Boulevard and I had the big New York Times ad, you know, before all the darkness and the tigers came at night. I mean, so high. Just sketch little things of like Patty winning her second Tony for Norma Desmond on Broadway. And then making the movie of Evita based on that success.
Can it be that it was all so simple then?
Yeah, time has rewritten every line.
Every one of those lines.
But it was a magical time of exploration. And Barbara had just released Back to Broadway. And
yeah, it's truly a creative time for totally. Broadway and Jen.
But I went to the Hollywood Bowl and with my friend Sarah Levy, and we went to see this show. And, you know, a lot of these Jerry Herman songs, I really only knew, like, I Am What I Am. Mm-hmm. I only knew for the parody from Forbidden Broadway, I Ham What I Ham. And Hello Dolly, I only knew the parody from Forbidden Broadway, Oh No Carol.
I haven't heard that.
And, Don't You Dare Do Hello Dolly Once Again. Don't be annoyed, fellas. I'm keeping you employed, fellas. Promise you'll never do this show. Either it's this or Lorelai. I just love it. But here I was at the Hollywood Bowl seeing George Hearn do I Am What I Am, Carol Channing do Hello Dolly, and so many great artists that we really just have to go through it.
Well,
number by number.
Number by number. Okay, well, I was going to say straight into Carol, but there's actually a very important person before Carol.
Two very important people.
So right up top, straight out the gate, Liza Mae doing her intro.
By the way, peak Liza Mae.
Peak Liza. She looks amazing, healthy.
She's still skinny, and she's still fierce. And if she's doing cocaine, it's still the really expensive kind, and she's getting away with it.
It's agreeing with her.
She's just sold out Radio City Music Hall for like a year. She's on a glamorous world tour. Like, maybe nobody in the United States gave a shit about her Pet Shop Boys album results, but it is still on the dance tracks in Europe and Japan. And, you know, she is just like... She's fucking so big. She can't come to the Hollywood Bowl for this Jerry Herman thing. Yeah. She's like, I'll send my sister Lorna. She could use the word.
And honey, did she send her?
She sure did. But by the way, this video played live. All three video tributes, this and Angela and Paul and Linda McCartney, all played on the big screen.
Right.
And it was fabulous.
Well, so the main nugget of intel that we get from Liza is
I have half a page of notes on the Liza video.
But what was the thing she says about his mom?
Hi, I'm Liza Minnelli.
This should be your audition monologue going forward.
Thank you.
What's the thing? Whenever Jerry would sit down at the piano, his mom would just say,
"Have fun, Jerry."
Yeah. So we get immediately that Jerry Herman's mom was not a stage mom, which is very fascinating to me because I feel like that translates in his work. It's so much about just enjoying life and having fun and being in the moment. And it's not about that whole attitude. I feel like maybe that was given to him by his mother.
Totally. So hearing this Jerry Herman overture that starts the show, conducted by the great Don Pippin, who we totally stan. Yeah.
Who sat in front of me at the Jerry Herman Memorial.
Yes. It's for all of our complaints last week about the showstoppers and like how Broadway happens at night and this doesn't feel like a gala event. No music is more gala than Jerry Herman's music.
That's right.
Every single song, even like the secondary character songs and the flops are still like, ba, 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 ba.
I mean, they play every fucking song. Like, I literally made dinner during the overture because it was so fucking long. And then they even add in We Need a Little Christmas. I was like, that's how you know it is a complete Jerry overture when they add in We Need a Little Christmas.
Totally. And I loved the recognition applause for If You Walked Into My Life and for The Best of Times.
Yeah.
I mean, what? No music calls for recognition applause more than Jerry Herman's music.
What time of year was this?
It was it was like July 1st or something.
Oh, interesting. Because I was like, you know, because later on in the show, they do a whole We Need a Little Christmas number. And I was like, oh, maybe it was around Christmas time, but. Guess
no, the Hollywood Bowl is a summertime venue. It opens
interesting.
In the fall.
I've never been. I have to go sometime.
By the way, I think we've said this already, but these videos are all on our YouTube playlist.
Yes, and they're also on Ben's YouTube profile under a weird name.
My name for this is famous gay composer... Celebrated outdoors, lots of biggies.
Yeah. You know, we have to find a way to get around the
we don't want
Jessica Fletcher's of YouTube.
Yeah.
Anyway, so during the orchestra, you know, they're showing the stage, or sorry, during the overture, they're showing the stage, and immediately I clock the white staircase. And I was like, oh, bitch.
That staircase makes a promise, and you know it's going to be delivered.
It has to live up to that, and it sure does. So, first up, Miss Carol Channing.
And peak Carol Channing. And now
Carol Channing, like, wig barely glued.
The wig
down.
Comes from like one of those machines at like, carnival that like use a claw to like rip it off a stuffed animal.
She keeps like pushing her hair out of her face.
She knows it's not working out tonight.
Every time she does, the wig slips back a little further.
In the summer breeze. But she's still viable as a woman here, you know? Carol Channing, and she's like, it's all a big joke. I have a rocking body. And she's wearing like a not sequins.
It's not sequins, but it's like this like low waist. I don't know what you'd call it. Like she wears one later in the show that's the exact same style.
Different color. Well, and this one I believe is pants, and the one later is
This one's pants. But it's blue, it's a blue, it's like
mint blue. Right.
It's like the exact shade of blue that like Rosemary Clooney and Vera Ellen wear in White Christmas when they do that sister number.
Well, all my clothing is based on the color scheme of that film. I love it.
The films of Irving Berlin. So she looks great, but yeah, just so Carol.
And I mean, she says my favorite Carol Channing line ever, because she talks about how Jerry wrote the lyrics.
I wrote this down too, yes.
And, you know, so remember to double your pleasure and listen to the words. She sort of like gets herself off stage.
Arms everywhere. When God was handing out talent, Jerry stood in line twice.
I mean, it's like amazing how she can say these things that are like such cliches that they're almost like don't need to be said. I did. I was trying to remember what exact date this was, because I thought I'd gone to Barnard like July 3rd or something. So I was like, it couldn't have been July, but I guess it was like very beginning of July. Anyway, but I looked it up. I found the LA Times review of the concert, and I found the LA Times feature story from earlier that week interviewing Jerry. And it was interesting that it described him as having a little bit of like not a complex, but like feeling like he was, I think he talks about, people talk about him as the composer and don't give him credit for the lyrics. Mm. And so I feel like Carol read that article and she was like, well, I think I should make a real big point about Jerry writing the words, because it's true. Some people don't write both.
Yeah. Well, no, the way she said it is so good. It's like, do you think she wrote all that by herself, or did she have like a little like Bruce Valanche behind the scenes? Like,
well, someone wrote the show.
Right.
So I think her lines were written for her. But, you know, Carol was a member of Mensa. She was very smart. And she and her late gay husband, Charles Lowe.
Yeah.
You know, they famously got divorced because he was gay. Like just a couple years before he died, like in the early 2000s. And she married her high school sweetheart.
Yes.
But Charles Lowe was like, I think he'd been a publicist before they got together, and then he stayed her publicist, or maybe just her manager. But famously, like, he was extremely controlling and hands-on and a very strong shepherd of her career all along. And she was very much, I mean, Leroy Reams has told me how like all the just years and years and years they were on tour with Hella Dolly, that she, and he also toured with her in Lorelei in the 70s. She was, in the early 70s, she was relentlessly doing press. I mean, every town they would play, she would be up at 5 a.m. going to do any kind of a radio interview. I mean, talk about going to the opening of a box of stamps. I mean, she was, you know, matches, whatever. So I think, I feel like when Carol says the bullshit dialogue in like a gala concert, it's been well
and
rehearsed.
Well, and at the end of her little bit, mind you, she's not singing a lick of a melody. She's not singing a song at all. But at the end of the thing, she gets this huge applause. And Jerry, you can see him mouthing perfection to the woman sitting next to him.
His girlfriend, his desk girl. I'm not sure. There's two women. I think his best friend, I could be getting, there's two names I might be mixing up. I think that's Carol Dorian, who I think was his best friend. Mm-hmm. There's another woman too. And one of them was either the mother of or the grandmother of this guy, Lee Haspel, that I went to high school with, who was this like really hot straight guy that like wore cowboy boots and was like from Texas. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing his name as like a thank you or a PA in the program for this concert and being like, does this mean he's gay? Then I found out it meant his mom was like friends with Jerry.
Yeah.
But well, I was pretty excited at the time.
There was a couple of, there was one woman who spoke at the memorial who was like his best friend or whatever. And she talks about him being the godfather of her daughter or something.
Yeah, I think so that might be the person.
Maybe it was one of them.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Carol finishes and then...
First up.
Straight off the gate, Miss Leslie Uggams.
In a very Mame-esque,
yeah,
like...
yellow.
Hostess robe and like, you know, silk palazzo pants.
Yeah, palazzos. I was trying to think of what those were called. Yeah. She sounds amazing.
Beyond amazing. Like, she almost sounds too good. I was like, why is this not working for me as well as Marilyn's version?
Right. Well, it's a little too, I mean, it's wonderful and she's amazing. And
amazing. I mean, I wrote down, if I can't have Marilyn or Angie, give me Leslie for this song.
But it's a little bit like, it's not like,
it's not a statement of life. Marilyn's is actually like a statement of life. Leslie's very like, roll the rug up. It's just like so much belt. Like,
and
it's like
she takes the up option at the end, which I've never heard taken before. Whatever it is.
So effortless. I mean, her voice is just like crazy.
Totally.
I mean, talk about all this shit though, that when you listen to the actual song in the show or on the cast album, and you're like, oh right, it's like a dance number. She doesn't have that much solo material. Leslie does all that, like when she comes back the second round, second time to the same lyrics, like going up on
them.
Like,
yeah.
She knows how to like make that song build.
Yeah. I mean, and also it's worth mentioning on that cast album, those chorus girl parts are like in the stratosphere.
Yeah, the famous Jerry Herman like soprano parts for no reason.
It's insane. Okay, so then
George Hearn
comes on.
Movies were movies,
which I have to say is like my least favorite Jerry Herman song to hear sung out of context. Well, even in Mac and Mabel.
I hated it more in context.
Especially out of context.
I actually really like it, and it like just takes me back to my childhood to hear George Hearn sing this song. Mm. His wife was a chorus girl that was in La Cage aux Folles.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got married and had children together. And at some point, I think because of Sunset Boulevard around this time, they were living in LA. She must have been friends with or taking classes at Valley College, the community college near my house.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend was taking an after-school musical theater class there. And so George Hearn did this one-hour concert for their class, and I got to go watch it. And I remember
one hour. That's a lot.
It was kind of amazing. And he sang, like, all the big songs, including this. But it just takes me back to that. But the only thing I don't like about this song is like the video clips, the like film reels of like,
I hate that shit.
And then my note was, I think Jerry Herman thinks that Mac and Mabel is more historically significant than it is or than I think it is. Like, I feel like Jerry thinks that Mac and Mabel is like about real people
and about
time.
Yeah.
And to me, it's not, it's about like just these characters, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Like, so I don't know what to do with that, but I just get annoyed when it's the clips.
I agree. I was like, ugh.
The only reason I've ever heard of William S. Hart is because of George Hearn singing that name.
Yeah, totally.
And now Dead Sills. Well, and of course, Bob Preston.
Yes.
Speaking of. I've heard of.
Barely. Flo Lacey comes out.
You realize she's a Broadway, pardon me, you realize she's a replacement Ava, right?
I did not know that. But if I barely know who she is, a lot of the youngins don't. But she comes up.
The youngins actually will know her as you would because she was in the Broadway revival.
Oh, it's your masseuse.
How strange. I didn't know that could happen. Well, I love how I put my phone
On loud.
On, what do you call it? I put my phone on airplane mode as if that would make a difference.
Oh.
But it was ringing on my computer. I don't know how to make that not happen.
Well, it's fine.
But we'll figure that out before Betty Buckley. But anyway, Florence Lacey was in the Bernadette revival of Follies.
Oh, who did she play? Which one?
I mean, she was understudy to Who's That Woman, but she didn't have a song. She was like
Hattie, is that her name?
Well, she was the understudy to Hattie, but she had a character. Like she was, you know, just one of the like,
you know, like the
ladies.
Ash ladies, yeah.
She's sort of like heavy set, so she wasn't that recognizable, having looked like this for like years and years and years before.
Doesn't look quite Lacey.
Thank you. But like I knew, I mean, she was the original star of Jerry Herman's 1976 or 7 musical, The Grand Tour.
Oh, okay. Which I don't know that one.
And well. In the 1978 Carol Channing revival of Hello, Dolly, she played Irene Malloy opposite Leroy Weems as Cornelius Hackle. Right. Then when Leroy directed Carol in the 94 revival, Flo came back and played Irene again.
How old was she then?
Well, how old was Carol then? She was still 25 years younger than Carol.
But I mean, Irene is...
Well, I don't think she... In 94, I think Florence Lacey was probably like in her early 40s.
All right. You know, I have to say though, I love... This is so off topic, but I love this. I want this trend to start of older women playing younger roles. Like the whole Adina casting as Funny Girl. Totally. I think it's so brilliant. Because it's, first of all, it works really well for that show because Fanny's like looking back on her career. But also, I love that idea of older women playing younger. I think it's wonderful. Anyway.
Florence Lacey, yeah. She had been, after doing the Hello Dolly in 78, she was a replacement Ava on Broadway and she toured in Evita forever. So much so that there's a 1989 world tour cast recording of Evita with Florence Lacey that like I like grew up on. It's like one of my like major English language Evita recordings.
One of your broken records.
Thank you. So anyway, it's needless to say, I was very much aware of Florence Lacey when I attended this concert and was thrilled to hear her voice so spectacular, but I remembered it wrong. I always remembered this being the best version ever of It Only Takes a Moment. And I remembered her going, and that is all that life's about and we'll recall when time runs out. And it's not. It's and we'll recall when time runs out. The high note, it goes up on run. Time is still low.
But it's different from the original.
Well, I thought she went up and she doesn't. The person that goes up is on Jerry's Girls. It's Leslie, but she goes up in head voice. It's like the one time Leslie ever decided to mix. She's like, when time runs out.
Well, I think Florence has a good voice and I'm loving like
thrilling, her. Thrilling high belt. Very carefully.
And she's doing some sort of like Lucy Arnaz drag because that wig looks so Lucy. But
I think that's her real hair.
Well, if it's good, then it looks healthy and shiny. This is one of my top 5 Jerry songs, I would have to say. This is not usual for me, but this is one of the songs that I prefer, if it's done as a solo, I prefer a male to sing it.
Interesting. Well, today or yesterday when I was on my rabbit hole of being like, why do I think Florence went up there? Who actually goes up there? Mm-hmm. I listened to many versions, including men singing it, thinking, well, maybe the men would go up, although they didn't. Only Leslie did, and she only did in head voice. But
I like imagining you like a detective, like in an old movie, like in the wee hours, burning the candle at both ends, drinking coffee, like clips of Florence Lacey trying to
100%. Also, we have to find it for the fans because there was a really hilarious video of Florence singing Don't Cry For Me at one point during her like many Evita tours, but it's just like early 80s with like crazy frizzy hair and some like weird arrangement where she's like I kept my promise. Don't keep. No, sorry. all you have to do is look at me to know that every word is true. Don't cry for me, Argentina. Just like a big, like,
finish. Yes.
I'll find it.
But not Linda Edder's.
No, no, not, no one will ever touch Linda Edder in that craziness.
Okay, so.
But I also find, frankly, Florence to be very Kate Baldwin.
Oh, that's interesting, because I was watching this and I was like, I can see her being a good Irene, but Kate, and specifically, if I'm being honest, Kate and then the one we saw on tour, Annalise Leeming.
Yeah, we loved her.
I can't go to any other Irene now. Those two have really, really cemented themselves as like my end-all be-all Irene Malloys. I mean, Kate for sure, because I saw her 3 times and I've heard her on the recording every day of my life since Hello Dolly. But Annalisa really blew me away when we saw her in the Carolee.
I wonder if you would have, if we could find video, it might be out there because there is video out there of Florence in the 78 revival.
Well, and I've certainly heard her on those recordings.
But the recording's from 94.
That's true.
That's a long way.
She does have a very... There is a very Kate Baldwin quality to her, you know, vocal delivery, but
it's so much beltier. I mean, she's almost Carolee-ish.
Very much so, yeah.
Speaking of, during the Carol Channing revival in 94, or, you know, the endless tour of it, Carol had to go receive an award somewhere at one point, or she had vacation. I don't know. Maybe it happened more than once. But Florence played Dolly and put in... sang in the Merman keys and sang the Merman songs.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, that's incredible. I thought you were going to say she played Dolly and Irene in the same show.
And was she associate wardrobe supervisor.
Okay, so speaking of Leroy Reams, he comes next and sings Put On Your Sunday Clothes. And he makes some choices that I live for.
The first thing I want to say before you say whatever you have to say about Leroy, and this is not because he's a dear friend, but it bears mentioning that in this video, he was 48 years old.
Yeah, and he looks
like a twink.
Yeah, he looks like he's like in college. He looks great.
And his voice is like limitless.
He almost looks like, I'm like just thinking of this right now, but I'm just picturing what he looks like. It's almost like a Baldwin brother, but like a little more...
gay.
Steve Carell-ish. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, he's very cute. But he does this thing. It's like, close your eyes and... it's a slick town, Barnaby. He makes town like 2 syllables.
Yeah.
Slick town. And then he goes... close your eyes and see it glisten, Barnaby. And he slides down on glisten. I'm like, yes, queen. Yes, yes, yes.
I kind of feel like because he and Jerry are good friends. I mean, Leroy was in, he got the job in the 78 revival of Dolly thanks to having been close with Carol when he toured with her and Lorelei.
Right.
But then Jerry asked him to direct the 94 revival. And then he also later took over as Cornelius in that tour after Broadway. And he had also done La Cage. He was supposed to be the final Alban on Broadway, but the show wound up closing early. But his picture was on the poster and then the show closed. But he did La Cage everywhere, all over around the country. So I feel it, and he did all those like evenings of Jerry Herman music at Rainbow. There's an album of him and Karen Morrow and Jerry Herman at Rainbow and Stars. And then he directed and starred on Broadway with Florence Lacey and Jerry Herman in Evening with Jerry Herman. That was on Broadway in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
It's another Florence Lacey claim to fame. Anyway, but I feel like Leroy and Jerry were very close. So I think whatever weird choices he makes musically were probably like the way Jerry likes it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it worked. It was so, you know, luscious to hear that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit like, you're right there with him when he's like, out there, Barnaby. And you're just like, yes, girl, belt it out. You know, and he's like, and we won't come home. And he's just like belting for Jesus. We won't come home. And you're like, get it, honey.
And then you're like,
we won't come home until we've kissed a girl. And you're like, spitting.
Totally.
But then you think something he, now he's into material he can really relate to because he's like, before the parade passes by. And you're like, oh yes, not Cornelius. Never Cornelius at all. This was always destined to be this.
Yeah, it's so funny. I was like, he started into that song and I was like, wait, is this really happening? Is he going to be the person who sings Before the Parade Passes By for this evening?
Oh, yes, he is.
It was bizarre. I was like, it's so, I've never heard like a young male sing that song in that sort of setting.
Well, I mean, he might have been leaning into his twinkish good looks for the beginning of the medley, but Before the Parade Passes By, it's a little more coming into his own as a man of a certain age and stature.
Totally. And then when he did the little dance at the end, like, a, you know, the little march across the stage or whatever, yes. It was very like old gay man alone in his Upper West Side apartment. On like a Friday night with a couple of red wines in him, you know.
and the last note, I mean, it must be said, you know, few, if any, have hit that last note as strong and hard and big as he has. Mm. But none have then decided to go from that note and slide up another fifth or whatever that is. For the parade passes by.
Sliding up the Leroy Room story.
Yes. And after all that madness,
then it's the waltzes of Jerry Herman, conducted
which
by...
Which is, first of all, just about 5 minutes of an instrumental version of dancing.
Dancing, yeah, totally.
Which somehow, no matter how much I kept waiting to get bored and annoyed, I never got bored or annoyed.
Again, I just turned it up and then I went in the kitchen and like did a load of dishes. And when I came out, it was like still going on. I Don't Want to Know is another one that you don't... think of it as a waltz.
I was like, wait, is this originally from A Little Night Music?
Right, totally.
Shalom from Milk and Honey was the number two song before I Don't Want to Know.
Oh, okay.
And it means, what's it? Shalom, shalom. I can't remember how it goes.
I don't know, but...
nice as hello, something like that. And then I'll Look Over There from Lacage.
Yes, yes.
Another one that I did not realize was a waltz.
Okay, so then...
But it was a good chance to peep the staircase because yeah. They were filming different angles of Don Pippin conducting and of the orchestra. And I just kept being like, now, looking ahead to the staircase moments sure to come. I was eyeballing it.
Okay, so next up is...
Musical theater history.
Musical theater, a trio version of Forever...
I only regret that after our Corin Streams artwork 2 weeks ago was the Andrew Lloyd Webber love trio of right. Audra, Marin, and Judy, that last week we didn't go with the Pam Myers, Donna McKechnie, and Browning. It would drive person crazy because it would have been the proper way to get into the series we are now in.
Truly. So they sing it as a trio.
Wherever He Ain't, sung by Lorna Luft, Karen Morrow, and Florence Lacey.
Yeah, Flo still looks like Lucy, Karen looks like Doris Day, and Lorna...
And Lorna looks like Judy.
Lorna kind of looks like Michelle Visage also. Just in the face.
Also Alexis Michelle.
Don't.
Well, the dresses, by the way, the dresses are by Nolan Miller, who did Dynasty.
I made a special note. Love the dresses.
I mean, I'm pretty sure this gold lamé dress actually was on Dynasty. He already had two because it's the dress that Linda Evans and Joan Collins both wore to the same party. That was a fight scene. And so they just needed one more to get these bitches in it.
Really, really your peak crossover language right now, Jerry Herman and Dynasty. So it's really good, but I was like, I don't know if I need this for this song. You know, it's one thing if it's You Could Drive a Person Crazy, but if it's a song like Wherever He Ain't, which you want to hear just from like a feisty, like leading lady, it's like whenever it's as a trio, like a lot of the emotional power and kind of intention gets lost, I feel, of the story of the song.
I will say to you now the same thing I say when people complain about Patti LuPone's enunciation of lyrics.
Okay.
It's not about the song.
All right. Continue.
Like, this is about these three women.
Three tall women.
They're not tall. One of them is Judy Garland's daughter, and you will never forget that when you see them go onto the high notes, and there's Florence Lacey and Karen Morrow, straight back and straight armed,
yeah.
And there's Lorna giving you full Carnegie Hall back bend.
And then and
you just have to watch Lorna for the whole video because
oh yeah,
and I think it's so bad and it's so perfect.
Her
she
what?
Literally, like, at one point walks downstage center toward the camera going like, yeah, this face, I mean, that says like, why I oughta.
It's truly like, I don't know. What,
mugging for the gods.
Mugging, yes. And then there's like this weird like choreography bit that they
oh, the choreography is so good.
And then like at the end, like everyone kind of just like gets all bunched up around Lorna and then it all just kind of goes off the rails for a quick sec.
I mean, the problem with this being a trio, or one or two of the problems of being a trio, is like, you know, you really want Bernadette or Debbie Gravitt to be like, it's time for little Nell to rebel. You don't want them to, but when people are singing in three-part harmony, they have to be like, it's time for little Nell to rebel. It's like, you know, and like also it ruins like the, like, you know, if he's in heaven, I'll go to hell.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just like,
I think I just chipped a tooth. I got too excited.
Lorna's fault.
I don't know. I just love this. And I have to say, I've loved it more and more as the years go on.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. My beef was the main thing I just said, but there's
but so, you know, but look, so you have your whole life to see a really terrific belter just like perform the shit out of Wherever He Ain't.
Right.
This was your only chance for this, and you should be grateful that you got it.
I am.
Next up.
There's so much more to say about Lorna in songs to come. Okay, next up. Davis Gaines singing Song on the Sand.
Now, I'm not going to say anything because I really just want to hear you respond to this first.
Well, the first thought is those teeth, honey, those chompers are gleaming for the quads. And this is one of the, I've seen Lacage performed several times at regional theaters. And I've seen, of course, The Birdcage, but I don't really listen to that much. And this is a song that I hadn't heard in a long time. And so I was pleasantly reacquainted with it. And it's so beautiful. But my note I wrote for Davis Gaines was that his take on this song is very growly.
That's his way.
Very growly. It's like a lion on the sand. Tiger King. Anyway, but yeah, it was fine.
I mean, didn't hate it. Davis Gaines, Michael Crawford opened Phantom in L.A. right after Broadway.
Uh-huh.
And then Phantom ran in L.A. for 4 years, not a national tour, just an L.A. company.
Michael Crawford?
Well, Michael Crawford did 6 months or whatever he did in L.A. And then Davis Gaines did the rest of the run.
Wow.
So he was like a big star in L.A. musical theater at this time. And I just remember his headshot in the Phantom program and just thinking he was so hot.
Ooh.
And then going to see him in this and being like, in fact, he is.
Yes, he's very attractive.
Now, only a couple years later, when I worked on Sweeney Todd with the Philharmonic, he was Anthony. And that's when you started to think, how come he can't move his forehead?
Yeah.
And over the years, it just, that became more and more of like, you know, a little bit too frozen in time, if you will. Yeah. But I do look back on this as like, still just like young and beautiful. And like, you know, he's a bass baritone. Mm-hmm. I mean, he sang a lot of Phantom in like straight up falsetto. He just had such a wide, beautiful range. And this might be my favorite version of Song on the Sand. I mean, I just think his voice is so resonant and so beautiful. And I love this song so much.
Yeah.
And I feel like you, on the cast album of La Cage aux Folles, it's almost like you hear George Hearn being like, but I'm not really gay in real life.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and then like,
actually.
Thank you. And like, you know, like, I feel like the Broadway revival, Gary Beach was like a, not really like sexy and romantic leading man, you know, and, you know, Kelsey Grammer, neither. So this is kind of like my favorite version, I think, you know, except if Kelly O'Hara had sung it at the memorial as she should have, but didn't.
Yes, totally. This is a song I definitely need to hear someone like that sing.
But I really love this song. Also, fun fact, Carol Channing famously starred in the 78 Broadway revival of Hello, Dolly! As well as the 1994 Broadway revival of Hello, Dolly!
Uh-huh.
But in 1983, she started a national tour that did not come to Broadway. And in that national tour, Davis Gaines played Cornelius Hackle.
Oh, okay.
Also, around that time, Davis Gaines started a regional production of The Rink starring Lainey Kazan.
Oh, fuck. Now that's the one I want to see.
I would like to know who played Anna in that, who played Angel.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Because I'm guessing it wasn't Bette Midler or Barbara Streisand.
Hell no. next up is Take It Off, which...
First is Take It All Off.
Take It All Off. And
by the way, Lorna at the time was starring in the national tour of the Faith Prince Guys and Dolls.
Oh, as Adelaide?
Yeah. And so the those girls that did this show were her hotbox girls in the national tour of Guys and Dolls. They were playing LA at the time. And I'll never forget the brochure said featuring the incomparable Lorna Left.
Certainly is incomparable. I mean, I'm pretty sure Lorna's wearing the same like pregnant belly prop that she was wearing as Gooch in the Jerry.
Absolutely.
She just has it
absolutely
in the trunk of her car ready to go. I mean, the note I have here is funnily written song. The lyrics are funny, but she really misses all the opportunities to make funny choices.
Really? I think she's actually great in this. I actually think this is her, I wrote down best acting of Lorna's career.
No, I thought it was so just like, I mean, it wasn't, I mean, she looked okay up there, but it wasn't, there was just, where are the choices? Where are the choices? Where are the jokes? Where are the, how are you, she's not making this her own. She's not really doing it in a unique way.
I mean, her brand isn't really unique.
Basic.
Her brand is more like dead center, square on the nose, drive a truck through it.
It's so true. I mean, it's so on the nose. And that's what I didn't like about it. But, you know, if I mean, when you put it like that, it's she's definitely consistent in that regard.
I mean, I do feel like it's a very, like, on-point performance. Lorna, as she has said in many events, is best friends with Jerry Herman.
I'm sure she's a great time. I'm sure she can.
Well, I don't know about that. But she did star in a national tour called Jerry Herman's Broadway Years.
Interesting title, okay.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Yeah.
But that's a fact.
Okay, so then...
Next up is We Need a Little Christmas.
Which, I hate Christmas songs out of context, but I guess...
I mean, in fairness, this is not a Christmas song. Everyone wants to make this a Christmas song, but it's actually... This song is actually the same number as It's Today.
Well, right, but it's usually played around Christmas time.
Right, but that's because, like, people are like, it's Christmas, I'm playing it! But, like, it's actually, like, about how it's not Christmas.
Right.
And we all wish it were.
That's true. But,
regardless, you understand them putting it in this show. But what I said was, you have too many belters when Karen Morrow gets stuck with We Need a Little Christmas.
It's so true.
Karen Morrow, like literally the greatest Broadway belter of the 1980s.
Totally. Yeah. Well, and I totally agree with that. And it's so funny that there was so much Karen Morrow on this because I've recently been getting into her so much because of the recording of The Grass Harp that you sent me. Mm. And she is just miraculous, especially that one like Bible tent revival number.
The Baby Love Miracle Show.
Baby Love Miracle Show. It's like 14 minutes long. It's amazing.
Call me Baby Love.
Then I think the next number is our first returning artist, Leslie Uggams, singing the other main song, If You Walked Into My Life. Her voice is amazing.
I mean, she comes out and as soon as she goes, where's that boy with the bugle? I was like, oh, I guess we're doing this.
Yeah, I mean,
I feel like it would have been nice if somebody was like, okay, Ben.
Yeah, no Lou.
I'd like to invite you to screen.
Yeah.
It's going to be the week if you walked into my life in a moment. So we just need everybody to just get
yeah.
It just seems so sudden.
Yeah, baby. No foreplay, just going right in.
I mean, on one hand, she kind of owns this song, I have to say.
Yeah, totally.
It's funny because I've seen her do it so many times, but she actually kind of goes up on the words in this version.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
There's like little subtle things she gets wrong, but regardless, they're like close enough. But like, you know, isn't the lyric, did I overstate my plan? Did I stress the man and forget the child?
Yeah.
She goes, did I overstress my plan?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
Classic mistake.
It's just funny to me that there was a time when Leslie wasn't quite perfect on the lyrics of this song that now she's like sung a zillion times.
Right.
But she owns the song. I mean, she has all the Broadway interpretive heft of an Angela.
Yeah.
With all the pop polish of an Edie Gourmet.
Yeah.
And all just like the like vocal, just like fireworks of a Jennifer Holliday. I mean,
100%.
She brings everything to the table all at once and has the nerve to add high notes nobody else can.
Yeah. How dare she?
Today.
Oh my God, I think the mic cut out. That was a little too much for the old snowball to handle.
It's like, today.
At the end of the song, Jerry goes fucking crazy. I mean, he...
Fucking crazy. Weeping, crying, jumping up and down.
Yeah, sweating. Then... I wrote Paul Simon, but not Paul Simon. It's
Paul McCartney. Wait, I'm still not done with this, Leslie. Like, can we also talk about her riffs? Like, though I'll ask myself my whole life long. No, but it's more than that. She's like, I'll ask myself my whole life long.
Yeah,
it's more
yeah,
like
yeah.
The trill is like, it's more multitudinous.
And her voice is already long. So perfect for trills because it's so like fluttery and buoyant and magical.
Her voice is like a million air balloons.
It really is.
And air balloons.
And the older she gets, it like, you know, just the same old Leslie voice.
Yeah.
And I mean that in a good way.
I mean, in fairness to like everyone else who isn't Leslie Uggams, mm-hmm. She became famous very young and stayed famous.
Hallelujah.
So that because she became famous in the 60s, not just winning a Tony for Hallelujah Baby, just like a year after Funny Girl or right. Whatever, maybe a year before, whatever, or early 60s. But she was on Sing Along with Mitch or whatever that like thing was. And she was a star all through the 60s and 70s. So much so that by the 80s, when she was doing Jerry's Girls on Broadway with Cheetah Rivera and Dorothy Loudon, mm-hmm. You could easily just go, huh, Black Don't Crack. There she is, a contemporary of Cheetah Rivera and Dorothy Loudon's. Same when she comes here. Later on in this broadcast, she and Rita Moreno sing together Bosom Buddies. And you're like, they're contemporaries, but Black Don't Crack. Not that Rita doesn't look fabulous. But in fact, she's not those people's contemporary. She's not the same age group as Cheetah Rivera and Dorothy Loudon. She's actually like, you know, the same age as like Bette Midler. Like,
yes.
Leslie Uggams is actually not that old. I mean, she
right.
does sound amazing for her age, and she does look amazing for her age, but she's also not as old as one would think based on how long she's been around.
That's right. Very right. Someone who does look very much their ages is Paul McCartney, despite the efforts of Dr. Zizmore. And we don't need to dwell on this, but I will say he did, I think he did make a video for the memorial as well.
Yeah, although I don't like his video because he talks about how since we were on the charts together, since Hello Dolly got on the charts along with She Loves You, Yeah, 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 and I Want to Hold Your Hand. But actually what happened was Hello Dolly knocked the Beatles off the top spot.
Oh.
No, it's true. Then Hello Dolly fell down and the Beatles got back up and the Beatles stayed up and Jerry Herman and musical theater, in fact, never got back up there again. Yeah. But he could have just said, since you knocked me off the top of the charts, you old rascal. But he doesn't say that.
I love when you play British.
I know you do.
Speaking of
Hello Dolly
and doing voices, Leroy Reams coming up with all the impressions in his toolbox.
First, Carol, not all. He's got more for later. But first he does Hello Dolly as Carol Channing. And it's funny to me now because after the Carol Channing revival of Hello Dolly in 1994, which I must say, I always feel might have been inspired by the success of this concert.
Oh, interesting.
But that's just me. But after that, and then her permanent inclusion in Forbidden Broadway after that, it seems to us nowadays that, like, if you have Carol Channing in an event, it would almost be insulting to her not to have someone also do a Carol Channing.
Right, that's true.
But it almost feels like when Leroy comes out and starts doing, like, Hello, Harry. Like, you almost feel like, when he's like, it's so wonderful to be at the Hollywood Bowl. Doesn't it seem like the audience is like, oh, he's in doing an impression of her and she's here.
Yeah, it does seem, well, it seems so weird because it's the 90s and it's like, I mean, now we think of Carol as like this, or at least I think of Carol as like this old kooky star. But back then it was like she was still kind of in her prime and still doing all these shows. And
she kind of was old kooky like caricature at that point too. Mm. But it does seem a little bit like they're like overly scandalized by it. But he goes right from Carol Channing into Pearl Bailey, which would probably be racist by today's terms.
A little uncomfortable.
And then he does his Ethel Merman.
Good.
His Ethel Merman is good, although it's a little bit like, you know, you don't really want to hear people do Ethel Merman.
At least not.
And then he does Louis Armstrong, which he does very well, although I will say, apropos of nothing, so do I.
Okay. Wow, fellas.
Oh, wow, yours is good.
When my sister was learning tap dance when we were kids, her tap routine was to this song, Sippin' Chicken Soup with Rice.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
It was like, in February, it's so nice, a slipping on the sliding ice, to sip hot chicken soup with rice, sipping once, sipping twice. But my mom would always make me go, sipping once, sipping twice, sipping dipping soup with rice on ice.
Oh my God, it's so good.
My sister would get apeshit. She got so angry when I would do that. But now she loves it.
I can't get over how good that is.
Thank you. But enough about me.
Back to the Armstrong tribute show.
Thank you. So next up is Leslie Uggams, who comes out to get back all these fucking people for doing their offensive, racist, black things. She comes out doing the, like, Jewiest Jew that ever Jewed.
Hello, Delhi.
Hello, Delhi.
I mean,
it was a real Oscar Mayer commercial.
I mean, right, that was. I wrote down that. I was like, was that really a thing?
Yeah, like that's the whole point, is how ubiquitous the song was. And next up is Lorna doing it, a sort of half-assed Lady Bird Johnson impression, the real-life Hello Linden song,
right,
that they sang to campaign. And it made me wish that when Patti LuPone did the TV movie LBJ, that she had sung this, but it was a missed opportunity.
Interesting.
Then we get the quote-unquote international dollies, which is just three chorus girls coming down the stairs in increasingly racist, like, costumes.
Small world couture.
It's a small world. And when the Asian one comes down in, oh no, she's not an Asian one. She's just a white girl in a black wig doing stereotypical Asian choreography. It's a little too much for a 2020 audience.
I was so over this number, and I was, like, about to throw in the towel. But then, honey, The beat drop. All motion over to the staircase. And who appears at the top? But Miss Carol Channing. And I lost it. I just started bawling my eyes out.
She gives it to you.
She sure does. And I mean, we've talked about this ad nauseum, but it's like, this is what Hello Dolly is about, especially this number. And just seeing everyone go wild for her, especially Jerry, and her just like beaming at the top of that staircase and giving you everything you want and need from Dolly.
The way she moves her body.
Yeah.
It's like the center of gravity is something that she does not have complete freedom to manipulate. And so therefore she must maneuver it.
Yeah.
Like, what are those things called, like, in navigation, like, great circle routes? Like, what are they called? The doldrums? What are those weather patterns? What am I thinking
of? I know you're talking about, but it's, I don't know.
Jet streams? Like, okay. Carol's like, well, if I want to get my left hip over to that side, now just hold on, I'm just going to... But yeah. It's like, she kind of needs to, like, brace herself and hurl and, like, hope for the best. And the other thing about Carol, though, is that I don't think it's true. I think she could move like a normal person and that's part of her, like, shtick. Yeah. It's so starry. It's so, so masterful.
Starry. It's so starry. I wrote down, like, a star exclamation point. And
yes, she was 72. She was the same age as Betty Buckley.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Yes.
I mean, she was not an old woman. She just used every aspect of that to her advantage.
I can't believe she was 72. I mean, I would have guessed much younger. And then that, of course, is the Act One closer. Everyone goes crazy, as it should be, as they should. And then she gets a little extra time at the end. And again, she kind of does that little... I mean, it's like Carol's version of, like, Liza Minnelli turning off a lamp. It's like she kind of, like... you know, saunters off stage and gets that extra bow.
Absolutely.
Alrighty. Okay, so on to Act Two.
And the USC Trojans coming out.
Yes.
Playing, what did they play? Did I even write it down?
I don't remember, but again, this is like, I guess, the on-tract.
It's the on-tract. And it's an introduction to a great star.
The greatest star.
Great star.
Coming out, B. Arthur.
Beatrice really is a class act.
She is such a class act. And I was thinking as I watched this, I was like, is B one of my top five divas? Like, there's
just, you would certainly hope so.
There's just something about her that is just so perfect, and it just sits so well with me. I think some of it because she's a Taurus, like us. But there's just something about her, especially in this moment where she's like in California, like she just drove over like the 5 minutes from her house.
She just wrapped her like insanely successful run on the Golden Girls.
Yes, this is right after Golden Girls. I think
she like could not be more like rich or famous.
Yeah, right after Golden Girls. I mean, she is... arguably, besides Carol, I mean, she's the biggest star in the show.
Oh, she's bigger than Carol.
Bigger than Carol, but maybe not in the Jerry context.
Yeah, but this is the Hollywood Bowl.
Very true. And she does, it's worth saying, she and Carol are the ones holding Jerry's hands at the end of
it
the
is
show.
Worth saying.
I love B's outfit because everyone else is wearing like these colorful, kind of pastel-y, summery colors, and B comes out in just all black.
She looks fucking elegant and fierce.
And she's just
so smart and funny and real.
Has never been funnier. I mean,
she throws shade. The whole Vera joke about
fucking good.
He was gonna write a show for her called Vera.
Yeah.
He wrote a show for her called that was called Vera, but they had to change the name because he couldn't rhyme anything with Vera.
Yeah.
And gets a big laugh and then Sondheim could have rhymed it.
Yeah. And she does her classic B. Arthur slow burn to the audience, and it's just everything.
Harry's loving it. Everybody's loving it.
Loving it. I mean, this was really a high point for me. I wrote down her comedic delivery is perfection.
She makes the whole thing about how the man in the moon was actually out about outing.
Yes, yes. And then these girls come on and dress her in her like Merlin drag to perform the song.
So great. I will say, as great as she sounds, I mean, she definitely speaks the beginning part more than you like remember her speaking it like on the cast album.
Yeah.
Though it's shocking. It's completely true.
She does have some good notes in there. I mean,
she has some good notes, but she does crack, unfortunately, at the end.
She does crack. It's very,
it's a little sad for me in my family.
Yeah. What is the note? The man in the moon is a miss. Yes. But she doesn't let on that she even has noticed.
She may not have.
She may not have. And I don't know. I love B so much. And the older I get, the more I really am settling into my Dorothy years.
Absolutely you are. I love how she's like, a show that Angie and I did together. Thank you.
Meanwhile, and I mean, we'll get to this, but Angie is not on site. Okay, so then she introduces Bosom Buddies, which is
new Bosom Buddies.
What?
A pair of new Bosom Buddies.
New Bosoms, yes. Rita Moreno, Leslie, as she calls her, Rita Moreno.
Moreno.
Leslie Uggams, singing Bosom Buddies. And I have to say, they flubbed the lyrics just like Tyne Daly flubbed the lyrics when I saw it at the memorial. This is just like a hard song, all the dialogue.
I think they do a great job with it.
They do great, yeah.
I love that they're dressed for it with their fascinators. Yes,
it's like, yeah.
It made me wonder if you have ever seen The Ritz.
The one about the bathhouse?
Yeah.
No, I remember when I was in New York when it was on, but I was...
Well, the play is whatever. But the movie features the original cast, including Rita Moreno and her Tony-winning role as Googie Gomez.
Oh, okay.
And you have not lived.
I am immediately putting that on the list.
I want to share my screen with you right now.
Please, please. And so in this... Hearing you say share my screen in this weird corona time we're in, I'm like, ooh, no. That's like, you know.
You can't get it from a Zoom.
You can't get it digitally. But yeah, do you watch One Day at a Time, the new one on Netflix?
No.
Well, I watched a couple seasons of it and it's okay. It's like a cute.
I mean, I'm old enough to have watched the original.
Right, right. I mean, it's that, but it's a little more PC and it's a little more woke, as the kids say. But Rita is like best actress. Give her the award. I mean, she's so good in it. It's really a masterpiece.
Well, she plays what's her name that played that part originally. Who? What's her name?
I don't know.
Starred in like Call Me Mister, Broadway star. God damn it! What's her name? No, Nanette. Nanette Fabre.
Oh, interesting.
Nanette Fabre was the Rita Moreno character, and Nancy Dussault was the Chato part.
Yeah.
Not Nancy Dussault, Bonnie Franklin. Sorry.
Okay. But yeah, Rita's so funny. Yeah, and she looks amazing here. And then, okay, so.
Oh, I really love Leslie's, when she says, like, Amos and Andy, and Leslie's like, bitch, this isn't just for you. This is for all the racist shit that's gone on tonight. And she just burns slowly and Rita just takes it. Rita's like, I'm fucking Puerto Rican. Why am I paying for the white man's sins?
Right.
She stands there and she takes it and it's very funny and good.
Yeah, that's so funny you said that. I didn't even think about that at the time. Like, because I noticed that and I was just like, what? But that's why. Okay, so now comes Lorna's big torch song moment. And I have to say, this was my favorite Lorna bit of the night.
Well, it's my favorite Lorna bit of the 20th century. No, that's not true. When Lorna was at her peak in like the early 2000s doing my songs My Mother Taught Me.
Yeah.
Where she was singing all those Judy songs with the, you know, full big band arrangements and everything. It was sensational. To hear Lorna in her big like MGM medley getting to the part where in your Easter bonnet, it was pretty thrilling.
She has an amazing, powerful voice. And, you know,
This is so much beltier than Bernadette. Like, when you listen to even Bernadette when she was like 28 or whatever in the original
loving,
cast.
Yeah.
And she's like, Bernadette's like, time heals everything. Time heals everything. And Lorna's like, when Lorna goes on the high notes, she opens up the room.
It is.
It's so big.
It is. It's like yelling almost. Like, it's
but like
insane.
So open and like rich.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this was my favorite.
There's a reason that Judy Garland said Lorna's got more talent than the rest of us put together.
Yes, yes.
Totally. I think what she meant was, strictly speaking, vocally.
Raw vocal, unhoned talent. But I always prefer Lorna on Torch Song stuff, not comedic numbers, you know, because she just doesn't deliver those for me. I need her using the voice.
To quote Tim Rice, I understand your feelings.
And I mean, even, I don't know, I feel like in these moments she's not really trying too hard. It's like she's just kind of letting her voice do the storytelling.
Since we've already thrown out all hope of Lorna Luft liking us, I would like to dispense with all hope of you liking Lorna singing Torch Songs. I'd like to point your attention toward a recently uploaded YouTube video.
Uh-oh.
Lorna from a telethon in the early 80s singing Hopelessly Devoted to You from Grease, the movie.
Uh-oh. Oh, I feel like I've seen this.
It's very new. Okay. And I just recently watched it. And I mean, she's young and cute, but 80s pop singer she ain't. Mm-mm. And she's like, she really goes for the like,
but now
there's no, you know, and it's like, you got to give it to her because like she's got, her voice isn't sweet and smooth like Olivia Newton-John's, but it's so powerful. She can just still get away with doing it, you know? Yeah. Anybody else trying to sing that Olivia song has to like place it.
Yeah.
Lorna, like, the only place she's placing it is out, you know?
It's up and out.
But she gets to the like, hopelessly devoted. What is it? Hopelessly devoted to you. No, how does it? I can't.
Hopelessly devoted to you.
Yeah, she's like, wait, I gotta get it myself. No, it's just my love aside, I'm out of my head, hopelessly devoted. And she's like, to you.
It's like a man doing Hopelessly Devoted to You.
It's very rich, but it's pretty bad. And anyways, it sucks. I need to watch it to understand.
Well, I have to watch it. But within this number, I think she kills it. It's thrilling. Even though, obviously, Bernadette is the end-all be-all.
Yes.
Next up is Angela Lansbury.
And we just have to take this opportunity to once again plug our new twice-weekly half-hour live stream chat show, Tuesday, Thursday, April, August. That's or right. As Lorna Luft would say, Tuesday, Thursday, April, August.
Yeah. So next up is Angela Lansbury phoning in from Ireland, which just...
You're looking- no wrong.
Peak Jessica Fletcher. I mean, she's wearing like a pink blazer, I think. It's just like unbelievable. And talk about a class act. I mean, I literally wrote down a class act. She is just so classy and
she can just make
warm anything
sound great.
Yeah.
Like, I wish Angela Lansbury were doing Trump's daily
address
COVID updates instead, because like she could be like well, your breathing will become labored and people around you will be just dropping dead every day on Facebook will be a who's who of who's no longer with us, and you just sound fun and fabulous and glamorous.
Yeah, this video was really, for like a weird phone-in, it was so good. Anyway,
so moving on to young Michael Feinstein coming out to do I Won't Send Roses.
Yes.
And I have to say, I kind of took a journey with this because at first I was like, ooh, young and sexy Michael Feinstein.
And then I was like, this
is why I don't like his voice. But then I have to say, like, when he got up, I actually felt like he was really doing an amazing job with it. Like, I sing this song and I know the song very well. And I noticed, because it's usually sung by men who quote unquote can't sing, you know, like Robert Preston or whatever. It's like a speak song. So I've always appreciated like the Leslie Uggams version from like Jerry's Girls, because she really gives you like, I won't remember which dress you wore, my heart is, you know, and I was like, and people never do that, but Michael does it. You know, he gives you all those decrescendos and all that shit. But he also, I really felt like he was telling a story. Like when he was like, he was like, I'm too preoccupied with me. Like, I believed him. And I actually felt like he was like really like telling the story and really charismatic and sexy. And he's really musical and sounds great. And I wound up just being like, this is a terrific performance. No wonder he's a fucking huge star.
Totally. I agree with that. And this is the same.
Sorry, one more thing. And the last note, the way he went from a head voice floating into a full chest was chef's kiss.
Yeah, he has great breath support, and he is very musical. I mean, that's the thing about he sang this song at the memorial as well, kind of, first of all, looking the same. I mean, obviously he's a lot older and looks a little, he's had some work, but I feel like he had a bit of work in 93 as well, and he'd kind of settled on his chosen face, you know. So seeing him now, it's like, okay, like, you can tell a little bit, but it's pretty much the same angles, the same architecture happening. But I love this song. I love seeing him and hearing him perform this song because, he just makes it so musical and so rich, and he just has a wonderful tone to his voice, and it's lovely.
If I could choose to hear Bernadette perform live two songs from Mac and Mabel, they would be Look What Happened to Mabel and the I Won't Send Roses reprise.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Or as I call it, So Who Needs Roses?
Yeah.
Then finally, Karen Morrow gets a proper solo after that.
Proper solo. And we finally get to hear I Don't Want to Know, not just as a weird waltz.
And it's pretty fucking great, I gotta say.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Yeah. This is a really good Karen Morrow clip. Yeah. And she has amazing teeth. She really gives you that top and bottom teeth when she's singing, which is, you know, important for the resonance.
The orchestra and balcony.
balcony.
Are you familiar with like her career other than this and The Grass Harp?
Not at all.
She grew up as a fan of, inspired by your favorite mezzo, Susan Johnson.
Oh, that's so funny. I was about to compare her to Susan Johnson.
She would do it too. Yeah. She got, her big thing was this musical, I Had a Ball, that she like sang on Ed Sullivan and everything. And she was supposed to be kind of like the next Merman, you know, and she did like Annie Get Your Gun at City Center, but, you know, it was, things weren't happening. And then she went out to LA. I think she moved there around the same time as her best friend, Nancy Dussault.
Uh-huh.
But in LA, there was a spinoff of Bewitched called Tabitha.
Oh, about the daughter.
Yeah. And she played like the kooky aunt. So she's actually like famous to television.
So she was like the Agnes Moorehead of Tabitha.
Totally, but Agnes Moorehead slash what's
Elizabeth Montgomery?
Yes, well, the Tabitha was more the Elizabeth Montgomery kind of character, but she was Agnes Moorehead slash what's her name, like the grandmother, like the old ladyish one.
Oh yeah.
Like she was kind of, you know, and the neighbor lady. She was a few different things kind of lumped into one archetype.
Tabitha.
I forgot her name, but do you know the movie Girls Will Be Girls?
Of course.
Well, you know how Evie supposedly was the star of Tabitha?
Oh.
They basically usurp Karen. In the universe of Girls Will Be Girls, there is no Karen Morrow.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, it's so good. I need to rewatch that. Wait.
Also, so weirdly, my real father that I don't
is Karen Morrow.
No, but his husband, who I've never met, they got married after we were like long estranged.
Yeah.
But his husband is a musical theater performer.
Mm-hmm.
And I the guests must be friends with Karen Morrow. And they are like really good friends with Karen Morrow. Isn't that weird?
Wow, that is weird.
There's a Broadway diva that's like not on my side in the battle between me and my father. I like have like Patty and like Betty and like Allison Frazier and Francis Raphael. And somehow my father got Karen Morrow.
This is a good little addition to Patty issues.
An addendum.
A Karen addendum. Okay, so after Karen is Rita Moreno coming back with...
Tap Your Breath Support Away.
Tap Your Breath Support Away. And again, not necessarily...
She was 62 here.
No.
Yes, looking like a zillion dollars, dancing her face off.
You would have asked me how much... You would have asked me what age she was. I would have said 30.
No, like 45.
No, I would have said 30, literally. Because, I mean, her body, her legs, her face. I mean, everything is like prime.
Prime. But no, she was 62. And she really moved. And she, I mean, you understand why people like Madonna and Britney Spears and everybody have so much lip syncing in their concerts. Because it's very hard
to
athletically dance and sing at the same time.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop Rita from trying. She's like, your troubles away. Your troubles away. Your troubles away.
You know, though, I didn't even notice. Like, I was so just entranced with her dancing that I didn't even really, it didn't even register with me the vocal issues.
But if you were missing the vocals you would have wanted there, you get them.
You get them in the next bit, honey, which is Leslie coming back with one of our favorites, Kiss Her Now.
Excuse me, Leslie and Florence Lacey.
Oh, I only wrote down Lacey. I mean, I only wrote down Leslie.
Florence Leslie. Lacey Uggams.
Oh, that's right, because they do it in like a round.
Yeah, it's the Jerry's Girls arrangement.
Yeah, again, I don't like this.
You don't?
No.
What?
No, I don't like songs that are, this is not nothing to do with this song in particular. It's just, I don't like songs in general that are supposed to be solos and they are made into duets.
Okay, but hold on. When you say that about Wherever He Ain't, it's actually sacrificing a lot of what would normally be good about Wherever He Ain't in favor of this new creation. But there's nothing sacrificed here. Leslie pretty much comes out and does Kiss Her Now exactly as she would do it. It's almost like no one's telling her that Florence Lacey's standing there going, before you kiss her, now before your father. I mean, Leslie just minds her own business and sings the song.
But I think that's why, I mean, it's distracting almost because it's like, I'm like, okay, shh.
It's actually better on the Jerry's Girls album. It's pretty vocally. It's very Alice and Emily. It's like vocally thrilling. Although I will say, if you really want to know my favorite, most vocally thrilling, I'm not talking about acting. I'm talking about gay goosebumps, hard penis, belt notes. Angela on the original cast album.
Totally. I wrote Angela down. I
kiss her now. Yeah. It's like some of the best Broadway belting that happened.
Absolutely. I wrote down, I just want to hear Angela sing this because...
I think Patti LuPone or Judy Garland could belt Kiss Her Now any better than Angela does on that album.
You know who else I've seen perform this song who kills it is past guest Nathan Lee Graham.
I do not doubt it.
Yeah.
Although I wouldn't mind seeing Nathan Lee Graham do it with Vivian Reed standing in the shadows.
Yeah, totally. Oh, I love Vivian Reed. I mean, that's, we should get her on the show. So next up again, Leroy coming back.
Speaking of women standing in the shadows. Leroy comes out and does his trademarked definitive version of the title song from La Cage aux Folles.
Yes, yes.
If you've never seen this song done any other way, then you haven't seen this song done.
Is this, okay, so I don't remember from the actual show La Cage, is this usually done in drag or out of drag?
In drag.
Yeah, I wish he would have been in drag. That's my only note.
But he doesn't need it.
He doesn't need it, but...
I mean, Leroy is in drag. The less drag Leroy is in, the draggier he is.
He's in Leroy drag. But...
he just wipes the stage with the song.
It's good, but and he does this,
more... La Cage aux Folles should be rewritten to incorporate Leroy's ad-libs.
Yes, totally. Lee Cage aux Folles. Yeah, well, who does he do? Like Tallulah Bankhead,
Mae West, and Marlena Dietrich.
Marlena Dietrich.
Well, next up
is George Hearn. I am what I am. Again, thrilling classic signature song.
I mean, it's kind of crazy how huge his voice is.
Yeah.
I remember when we were doing Sweeney Todd thinking at one point, like, because, you know, we had opera stars in all these supporting roles, like the judge and Joanna and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they just had these huge instruments that just filled the hall. And I remember feeling kind of like down on my girl because Patty would come out and she'd be like, you know, he's in a hush, well, hush. Don't distress yourself. What's your rash? You know, and then they're like,
I'll never see Joe
one day.
Yeah.
And she's like, and I just was like, God, Broadway's so tawdry. But George Hearn was in that opera camp.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter that he was a musical theater person. His voice had that muscle to it.
A lot of muscle. And never has it been more muscular than in this song. Especially at the end when he really just hits that final belt note.
Oh, yeah.
His mouth is like fully.
His mouth is crazy. He is the Marin Maisie of men.
The Marin Maisie of men. I like that.
I mean, I know George Hearn never sucked a dick, but I think he must have like sucked Dixie Carter's head or something. Well, actually, Lauren McCall probably had a big penis to suck, so he must have sucked hers.
Truly. Yeah, I mean, it's insane the amount of space he is creating in that trap. But it's so good. Everyone's, you know, going crazy, crying. And then, okay, so then Jerry comes on himself.
By the way, you know, Jerry had just turned 60 at this moment.
Okay.
Or he was about to turn 60.
I would have thought he was younger.
There you go.
It's
so the difference between him and Stephen Sondheim that Jerry comes and sits down at the piano and sings made up lyrics to the tune of Hello Dolly, thanking the fans for their years of support.
Totally.
Can you imagine Sondheim sitting down and being like,
no,
well, this is rich. Y'all have been great.
Yeah.
I am so lucky to have fans and not those who hate. In what world? Sondheim would never do that.
Never, you know? Never.
But Jerry's just like, thanks, fans.
For the memories, yeah.
Just like so, Jerry Herman. And then they come out in red dresses.
I mean, it is, I screamed. It is. Carol, Leslie, Rita, Karen, Lorna, B. Arthur.
All the greats. Flo. All the greats singing in unison, except one voice throwing it off.
Guess who?
The Elaine Stritch of Jerry Hearn tributes. Beatrice Arthur.
Beatrice Arthur singing down the octave.
But down an octave and change.
And change. But I will say, B did not bother me as much as Lorna fucking... like riffing on every single note. Wait,
let's get to Lorna in a second. You sing the unison chorus and I'll do B. Arthur, okay?
Wait, what were they, what song is it?
Was it The Best of Times?
Oh yeah, yeah, okay. The best of times
is now.
So well, live and love
summer, but a faded rose.
The lyrics too. So let this moment.
They get the point.
Yeah.
And what was Lorna doing? I didn't notice.
Well, Lorna's just like, the best of times is now, is now, is now. I mean, she's singing to the rafters. At the end, when they all take their bow, they all put their mics down to grab hands and bow. Lorna holds onto that mic for Jesus and continues skrelting. I mean, it's very like, you know that thing when you're a senior in high school and you get into all-state choir and then the first weekend you're rehearsing your first rehearsal?
Let me tell you about my senior year of high school.
And everyone's just trying to out-sing one another to like prove your worth in the chorus.
No, I was erroneous in forum and they made me lip sync during the group numbers.
Well, I mean, it's the opposite side of this story, but
I'm going to have to revisit. Yeah. I was just marveling at the fact that Carol's dress was a recreation of her first outfit in the appropriate color.
I wrote that down too.
Now, if you want to do a number in blue, I also have this dress in blue, and I believe I have it in canary yellow, but that's in Palm Springs.
That's in Palm Springs. Yeah, I literally wrote down same fucking dress, just in red. Then Carol and Bea hold Jerry's hands for the curtain call. And...
we love a ranking.
We love a ranking, yeah.
And ranking.
And I don't mean Anne.
Wow, this has been everything I dreamed it
would be. Wow, I'm like sweating. I need to like cool off.
Yeah.
Open a new window and let in some.
It's been a wonderful journey to take with you.
Yeah, totally.
We have some goodies coming up for the next ones, but of course next is Bravo Professor Betty Buckley.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so excited.
Okay, Dolly Concert Kill.
Oh, I have a good one.
Tomorrow, Lorna left Florence Lacey.
Okay. I mean, after our conversation, I kind of need to see Lorna as Dolly just so we can do an episode on it. Because there would just be so much to unpack. And then I want to see Karen, even though it would be like kind of stunty to see Flo as Dolly. I want to see Karen as Dolly. And then I want to, I guess I'd have to kill Florence.
Interesting.
You?
I would definitely want to see Karen as Dolly.
Okay.
That's a musical comedy legend.
Right. Okay.
I want that right now in my life.
Yes.
And I want to see Florence Lacey in concert. And that concludes the portion of my Dolly concert.
And Karen's still alive, yes?
Yeah, alive and well and hanging out with my estranged father.
I did a deep dive in her Wikipedia last night, and I was happy that she was still with us.
Oh, yeah.
I have another DCK, but I'm going to save it for our first live stream on Tuesday.
Join us Tuesday morning, 10:30 a.m., wherever live streams are sold.
Yes, wherever they're sold.
We'll be on Broadway World.
Broadway World Facebook page. And then YouTube, we're not quite sure where yet, but we'll be streaming live on YouTube somewhere. And then eventually those videos will live on our Broken Records YouTube page.
Yes.
All right. Well, that was fun. And thank you guys for listening. And make
sure
you
good night, Daniel.
What?
Say good night, Daniel.
Good night, Daniel.
Aww.
I'm Carol Burnett tugging on my earlobe for all you guys. And make sure you listen to the Bravo Betty biography, the BBB, before our interview.
I am Patty LuPone picking my underwear out of my butt.
What? I feel like that should be how we sign off every episode.
Yeah, totally. Thanks for listening to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. For more episodes, visit Broadway World, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts do be.
This episode was edited by me, Daniel Nolan.
Thanks to Emmy-winning composer and lyricist Lance Horn for the Broken Records theme song.
Follow us both, Ben Rimmelauer and Daniel Nolan, on all y'all's socials.
That's Ben Rimmelauer. BenRimmelauer.
And that's Nolan with an E, not Nolan with an A.
Nolan with an A, isn't it?
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suf's celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suf's has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.